at VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear reports from Brian Lynn, Dan Friedel, and Mario Ritter Jr. Dan Novak presents this week's education report. We close with the next part of our history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Hong Kong ordered a mass killing of hamsters on Tuesday after discovering some of the animals were infected with COVID-19. The order came after a worker at a pet store that was selling hamsters also tested positive. Hong Kong's government planned to kill about 2,000 small animals, including hamsters, in an effort to prevent virus spread. Officials said the killings would be carried out in a humane way. The city also banned the sale of hamsters and the import of small animals. The pet shop employee tested positive for the Delta variant of COVID-19 on Monday, the Associated Press reported. Several hamsters that were being sold at the store also tested positive. The animals had been imported from the Netherlands. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has stated that animals do not appear to play a major part in spreading COVID-19. But Hong Kong officials say they are not ruling out the possibility that COVID-19 might have spread from animals. We cannot exclude the possibility that the shopkeeper was in fact actually infected from the hamsters, said Edwin Chai. He is a controller at Hong Kong's Center for Health Protection. Hong Kong has also tested rabbits and chinchillas, but so far only hamsters have tested positive. Officials advised citizens who own hamsters to keep them at home and to wash their hands after touching the animals. The officials also warned animal owners not to kiss their pets. People who bought hamsters from the store after January 7th will be contacted by the government. They will be asked to hand over their hamsters and may also have to go into quarantine themselves. Hong Kong's Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals said it was shocked and concerned by the decision to kill the animals. It urged the government not to take any drastic action before examining other possible choices. After 3 months without any local virus spread, Hong Kong has started seeing new COVID-19 cases in humans over the past few weeks. As a result, thousands of people have been sent to government-run quarantine centers. Most of the new infections have been the fast-spreading Omicron version of the virus. The cases linked to the pet shop worker, however, were linked to the Delta variant. I'm Brian Lynn. Thank you.
Polish scientists say they have found a gene that greatly increases the risk of becoming severely sick with COVID-19. The discovery could help doctors identify people who are most at risk from the disease. Researchers from the Medical University of Bialystok carried out the study, which was supported by the Medical Research Agency. It involved about 1,500 COVID-19 patients. The researchers found that the gene was one of the most important factors affecting how seriously a person suffers from COVID-19. Old age and overweight were others. They said it increased the risk of severe COVID-19 sickness by more than 2 times. Professor Marcin Moniuszko led the project. He said the gene is present in around 14% of the Polish population, compared to about 9% in Europe as a whole. Poland's health minister also spoke at the press conference announcing the findings on January 13th. After more than a year and a half of work, it was possible to identify a gene responsible for a predisposition to becoming seriously ill with coronavirus, said Health Minister Adam Niedzielski. Dr. Radoslav Sierpiński is president of the Medical Research Agency, which paid for the research. He said it is important to use a test that will quickly show whether people have a genetic predisposition to severe COVID-19 infections. Observers blame high coronavirus death rates in Central and Eastern Europe on low vaccination rates. The researchers hope that identifying those at greatest risk will persuade more people to get vaccinated. They also want more intensive treatment methods to be available in case of an infection. Other studies have also shown the importance of genetic factors in how seriously COVID-19 develops. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Visitors who come to China for the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing over the next several weeks will be met by medical workers. The workers will give the visitors a test for COVID-19 and test the surfaces of the things they carry with them. Once the visitors test negative, they will be taken to their hotels in special vehicles. Compared to the bubble at the recent Summer Olympics in Tokyo, the bubble in China is more restrictive. Guards are visible in many places. Visitors and athletes are not permitted to leave the protected area until they go home. The restrictions are in place as many countries around the world are seeing a surge in coronavirus cases of the Omicron variant. In China, however, the number of cases is small as the country still maintains a zero-tolerance policy. In addition to the sports competitors and visitors, about 20,000 Chinese volunteers and workers will be inside the bubble. The Chinese government is warning regular people to stay away from the Olympics. If their car is in an accident with an Olympic vehicle, they are asked to stay away and wait for special police. The closed area is being called a loop. It opened on January 4th and will be fully active starting on January 23rd through the end of the Olympics, which begin on February 4th. If people need to leave the bubble, they are only permitted to do so in special vehicles. Olympic organizers said they expect some COVID-19 cases inside the loop, but they do not plan to change the rules unless there are many cases. No fans from outside China will be permitted to watch the events in person, and China has not yet said how many local people will be able to watch. China has limited the spread of the virus since it was first identified in the city of Wuhan over 2 years ago. Foreign travelers have not been permitted to come to China, so the large number of international visitors is a test for the nation. Michael Baker is a professor of public health in New Zealand. He said, "It will be difficult for China to prevent the spread of the Omicron variant." But, he noted, "the Olympics have a clear start and end date, and it can be tightly controlled." I'm Dan Friedel.
Handing power tools over to young students could result in some disastrous situations. But if those tools are combined with effective supervision and teaching, the students can learn valuable new skills and might even find a new career path. One such program in Washington, D.C. aims to teach woodworking and finished carpentry skills to teens and young adults. It includes a woodshop completely housed inside a truck that acts as a kind of classroom on wheels. The mobile woodshop program was started by the nonprofit Zenith Community Arts Foundation. It is currently based at Ballou Stay Opportunity Academy in Washington, D.C. Ballou Stay is an alternative education program that offers students job training and has a high school graduation program for adults over age 23. Marjorie Goldberg, Zenith's director, said the goal of the woodshop is to get people jobs. Goldberg is an artist, wood sculptor, and longtime member of the D.C. art community. She had long dreamed of creating a mobile woodshop to assist students. That dream finally came true in 2020, when the city gave her a large grant for the program. The program at Ballou is called a pre-apprenticeship carpentry training program. The subjects and skills taught in the class are similar to those offered by a local carpenters union that also supports the program. Students at Ballou can learn the same skills as a beginning carpenter would. These include cutting, marking, measuring, nailing, and how to use different tools. The class textbook provides step-by-step instructions on how to make things like simple wooden birdhouses to more complex wooden containers and objects. The truck is equipped with all the instructional materials and tools necessary to operate as a complete mobile classroom. Mobile workstations are also available, so students can work on projects outside the truck. If students pass the class, they can seek to enter the union apprenticeship program. Instead of a usual 4-year apprenticeship, graduates of the mobile woodshop can finish in less time. Joe Largis is a teacher at the woodshop. He said much of the class centers on teaching students soft skills. These are skills that are desirable in all jobs, such as teamwork, having a strong work ethic, being able to follow instructions, and arriving to work on time. Students also learn basic skills like math and how to read a ruler. The union wants people who are employment ready, said Austin Travis, the woodshop's other teacher. And that's a lot more soft skills than just being able to put all that stuff together, he added. Ryan is a student at the mobile woodshop. Before entering the class, he had some experience working with wood and tools. He had even helped a family member build a fence around a house. That's why I started in the class, because I like working with my hands, and I already knew how to work with electrical tools, Ryan said. I wanted to give myself a chance to get better at it. Ryan said he sees another benefit to learning woodworking. You can sell some of this stuff and make money for it. Building-related jobs are currently in high demand across the United States. One study from the Home Builders Institute found that 2.2 million jobs will be needed by 2024 to keep up with building demand. And the U.S. Bureau for Labor Statistics estimates that more than 89,000 openings for carpenters will be created each year in the U.S. over the next 10 years. Goldberg believes woodshop programs can help prepare the next generation of woodworkers. She said other schools in Washington have expressed interest in the mobile woodshop, and the program might be expanded in the coming years. Largis said the class at Ballou seeks to help some people who wouldn't have the chance to even get into the apprenticeship program and give them a leg up. That, he added, can hopefully help them with a better future. I'm Dan Novak.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. A new leader stood before the American people on March 4, 1913. He was Woodrow Wilson, the 28th President of the United States. Wilson belonged to the Democratic Party. He was progressive in his belief that government should take an active part in efforts for social reforms. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe begin the story of Wilson's presidency.
Woodrow Wilson had spent most of his life at Princeton University. First, he was a professor. Then, he was university president. Next, Wilson was elected governor of the state of New Jersey. His early success as governor made him a leading candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1912. Wilson traveled widely around the country during the campaign. He made speeches to many groups. He tried to make himself and his ideas known to as many Americans as possible.
Wilson called his program the New Freedom. One of his campaign promises was to fight for better conditions for America's small business owners. Such proposals helped him win the Democratic nomination for president. Then he defeated President William Howard Taft and former President Theodore Roosevelt in the election. Woodrow Wilson, the former president of a university, had become the president of a nation. The largest crowd in Washington, D.C.'s history welcomed Wilson outside the Capitol building on the day of his inauguration. He called on the American people to join him in making the country a better place. "Our duty," Wilson said, "is to correct the evil without hurting the good. I call all honest men, all patriotic, all forward-looking men to my side.
Wilson wasted no time. He immediately called a special session of Congress to act on Democratic campaign promises to reduce import taxes or tariffs. Wilson felt strongly about the need to reform these taxes. He broke tradition by leaving the White House to appear before Congress in person to appeal for his tariff proposals. Many members of Congress opposed Wilson's plans, but the new president used the results of a Senate investigation to win the fight. The investigation showed that a number of senators owned companies that depended on high tariffs for their profits. The votes of these senators were influenced by their property holdings. Public knowledge of the situation forced many of them to give up their holdings and stop resisting tariff reform. Congress finally approved Wilson's proposals.
Lower tariffs reduced the amount of money taken in by the federal government. So the Senate also approved a tax on income or earnings. A constitutional amendment had been passed earlier to permit such a tax. President Wilson and the Democratic Party were pleased with the new tariff and income tax bills, but they were far from finished. Next, they turned their efforts to reform of the banking industry. For several years, many people had recognized the need for changes in the banking system. The old system of uncontrolled private banks had developed years earlier, before the United States became a major industrial nation. Many people agreed that a more modern system was needed, but they could not agree on details.
President Wilson said control of the nation's wealth was held by too few men. He noted a report that said just two men controlled 10% of the total wealth of the United States. Wilson said the nation needed a money supply that could be increased or reduced when necessary to correct economic conditions. He said a method was needed to let banks help each other during economic emergencies. And, he said, laws were needed to prevent a few wealthy men from using the economic resources of the country for their own purposes. Finally, Wilson said the control of this system of banking must be public, not private. It must belong to the government itself.
Wilson called his proposal for a central bank the Federal Reserve System. Under the plan, the nation would be divided into 12 areas. Each area would have its own Federal Reserve Bank. These area banks would not do business with the public. They would serve only as bankers' banks. And they would issue a new form of money supported by the federal government. Most important, the leaders of the new system would be chosen by the government, not by private business.
Bankers, business leaders, and their representatives in Congress sharply criticized President Wilson's proposals. They said government control of the banking system was socialism, not capitalism. But Wilson refused to change his proposals, and he helped to lead the fight to make them law. Finally, Congress agreed. It did not take long for bankers to discover that the new system was much better than the old one. Today, the Federal Reserve System is one of the most important institutions in the United States.
For Woodrow Wilson, the fight over the banking system was yet another political success. He had won major reforms in the nation's tariffs, taxes, and banking systems. Now, he told Congress, that new legislation was needed to control the power of monopolies and trusts. These were the giant companies and business alliances that controlled complete industries. Wilson proposed a new antitrust law to control the actions of large companies. His supporters in Congress wrote a bill that listed a number of business activities that no longer would be permitted. For example, no longer could a company set prices that would reduce competition or create a monopoly. No longer could corporations buy stocks of competing companies. No longer could they demand that a store refuse to sell competing products. The new bill also protected labor unions from being charged with antitrust violations. It gave unions more power to organize and protect workers.
At President Wilson's request, Congress also prepared a law that set up a government agency called the Federal Trade Commission. The commission was given the job of investigating wrongdoing in business. It had the power to force companies to obey the new antitrust laws and other rules. Both the antitrust law and the Federal Trade Commission helped protect small business owners from the power of business giants. Once again, the proposals caused fierce debate. But once again, Congress finally voted to give Wilson most of what he wanted.
The early months of Wilson's term were one of the most successful times in the history of any president. The new president had won the election by promising major reforms in the economic life of the country. And he had kept that promise. The reforms were not only a victory for Woodrow Wilson, they also changed the face of American business and economics for many years to come. The income tax, for example, grew to become the federal government's main source of money.
Woodrow Wilson had taught history in the days when he was a professor at Princeton University. He knew his actions as president could influence the country for a long time. But as a historian, he also knew his own term in the White House could be changed by unexpected events. That is just what happened. Wilson campaigned for president mainly on national issues, but he soon was forced to spend more and more time on international issues. His first big problem was across the United States southern border in Mexico.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.